Hello and welcome to the podcast on company law issues for residential management companies. I have in front of me Craig Halligan and Robert Sprawson, who are respectively a solicitor, assistant solicitor, and consultant at Bishop and Saul Solicitors in central London. Craig and Robert, I should tell you, I own a flat in a block. I'm taking part in buying the freehold, and to this end, a company will be created to own it. Now, I've been asked to become a director of this company, and I anticipate becoming actively involved with the way it is run. I have to say there are things that concern me in terms of the company itself and being a director. Now, first off, I've heard about something called dormant status. What does it mean?
Yes, thanks, Nicholas. A company's dormant status refers to its accounting and transaction activity during any of its accounting periods. And a company is considered dormant if it has had no significant accounting transactions during that relevant accounting period. A significant accounting transaction is one which the company should enter into its accounting records. Now, because these questions relate to accounting practices and standards, we would normally strongly recommend that a company seek professional advice from an accountant to help guide them through the question of claiming dormant status at Companies House, as well as dealing with any similar issues with HMRC. It is, however, important to know that even if your company is considered dormant, you still have a requirement to file accounts annually at Companies House. There is a belief that if a company is dormant, then no accounts need to be filed, but this is not right. The form of accounts a dormant company would file is simpler than the accounts of a non-dormant company, but accounts nonetheless must be filed on or before the deadline for doing so. The filing deadline is very important because if it's missed, the company will be fined automatically by Companies House on an escalating scale from £150 all the way through to £1,500, which is quite significant. The company also risks being struck off for non-filing, and the directors risk criminal prosecution for non-filing as well. So it's very important to diarise the relevant filing dates to ensure the deadlines are adhered to. One last point I would say is that every director must take note of this. It's not sufficient, for example, to allocate this task to just, say, one director and rely on them to do the job. All directors under the Companies Act bear equal responsibility for non-filing such as accounts and will be held to account accordingly.
Thank you, Craig. Heard about something called the annual return. Should I really be worried about it?
Not really. The annual return is the second of the two annual filings that a company must lodge at Companies House each year, the first being the accounts mentioned just now. The annual return is simply a confirmation of an opportunity to update various non-financial details relating to the company that are held on the public register, and it is to ensure that this information is kept up to date. The information relates, for example, to the registered office details, directors' names and addresses, and certain other information relating to shares and shareholders. And it's quite a straightforward form to do. You can do that online. But again, there is a deadline for filing applicable to that, and the directors should make every effort to ensure that the deadline is met. However, in this instance, there is no automatic financial penalty if the deadline's missed.
Thank you. Now, I expect that now and again, we'll have to hold meetings at the company. Now, how often should we have them? Do we need one every year in an AGM? And what would we discuss at these meetings?
The first point I would say is to check the company's articles to see if there's any requirements set out in there for the company to hold an AGM. There's no longer a requirement under the Companies Act for a private company to hold an AGM. So it does come down to the governance of the company itself. We would suggest that for freehold management companies generally, it's considered good practice to hold at least one meeting a year to bring the shareholders together, bring them up to date on the company's activities and affairs over the past 12 months in its role as the landlord of the property. The company's accounts, once they've been approved by the directors, must be provided to each shareholder. And often the opportunity to do this is done at an AGM. So that's another topic that can come up for discussion. Just one important note on that is that the accounts are being presented to the shareholders, with the directors obviously there to answer any queries, but the shareholders are not being asked to approve the accounts because the approval is the responsibility of the directors.
Okay. Turning to being a director, are there any basic duties I should know about as the capacity of being a director?
Thank you, Nicholas, if I could answer that one.
Thank you, Robert.
The general principles applying to the constitution and structure of a company mean that, subject to certain limited rights of its members, all authority for the management of the company and decision-making lies with its directors. With that authority, directors of companies carry a number of important duties and responsibilities, and they need to be fully aware of these when taking on that position. Examples are the duty to promote the success of the company, and that involves a number of different considerations, to act with reasonable care, skill, and diligence, to exercise independent judgment, and to avoid conflicts of interest. They also include duties of good faith, loyalty, and confidentiality. In addition, directors are responsible for ensuring compliance by the company of all laws and regulations which affect the company itself. For example, those relating to employment, environment, health and safety, and property matters. They need to ensure that the company books and records are properly maintained and up to date, and that its annual returns and accounts and other public documents are filed within the applicable time limits. They're also responsible for the holding and proper conduct of directors' and members' meetings when required, and for making sure that a company's articles of association are fully complied with. The latter is particularly important, as members will often be looking closely at the requirements of the company's articles and sometimes taking legal advice on these. Where the company owns the freehold of a block of flats, the directors will be responsible for ensuring that it complies fully with the terms of all flat leases. That is in itself an owner's responsibility. That the building is fully insured, and that all laws and regulations concerning the ownership, management, and running of the building are adhered to. So we're seeing that the director's duties and responsibilities, particularly in the case of a block of flats, are wide-ranging and onerous. The consequences for breach can be serious. Exceptionally, it can lead to a director being personally liable for payment of damages or penalties, and in some cases, disqualification. It is advisable for directors to arrange insurance cover through the company against any personal liability that may arise from their position as directors, which is generally available subject to certain conditions.
Thank you. And now finally, do you have three thoughts for our listeners to take away with them?
Yes, I'm happy to kick off with that. I would encourage anyone involved with a freehold management company, whether as a director or a member, to take the time to explore the Companies House website. Companies House publish various guidelines that are extremely helpful for general guidance on dealing with the various events that arise in relation to the running of a company. And for that reason, it's well worth exploring that website.
And Nicholas, if I could add two more thoughts.
Thank you.
A director needs to be fully acquainted with his duties and responsibilities as a director and of the legal obligations of the company, with which he has to ensure compliance, and to take professional advice when needed. Finally, he needs to ensure that the board maintains good communications with members. However, the board should resist interference by members in the management of the company. The members' rights are limited, and directors, while complying with their duties, should maintain an independent position in managing the company and exercising their authority.
Thank you, Craig and Robert, for participating in this podcast, and thank you very much for listening.